Welcome to episode 41. I'm Stuart McCullough, I'm the CEO of VHAA. And starting with this week's industrial roundup and with community health in particular, this week we have a scheduled meeting with the MSAV to continue enterprise bargaining for a replacement agreement. That replacement agreement will cover dietitians, it will cover pharmacy staff as well as psychologists. With respect to health services, we've continued our regular bargaining with the AMA. The AMA had a member meeting on the 19th of October, and we are progressing through to all the major issues and looking to resolve the wage claim in particular. Our reference group has met again. It continues to meet on a fortnightly basis. All of the meetings with regards to the bargaining are subject to updates that you will find on the VHA community app. With respect to mental health and the mental health agreement, on the 23rd of October, VHA hosted the mental health reference group. For Health and Allied, we're scheduled to meet with HWU and DHHS for the October SDPPWG on the 25th of October. For nurses and midwives, also on the 25th of October, we have a scheduled meeting of the industry OH&S working group that will be conducted at the Royal Melbourne Hospital. On the 26th of October, also with regards to nurses and midwives, we've got the SDPPWG at the ANMF's new office. For the Allied Health Professionals, we're hosting the Allied Health Professionals SDPPWG on the 26th of October. Just a reminder, with the upcoming Cup Day weekend, the VHA office will also be closed on Monday the 6th of November, as well as Tuesday the 7th of November. And as always, all of our activities are summarised in the VHA community app. That's it for this week's Industrial Roundup. Welcome to the weekly update, where we go in depth with a particular subject. And joining me for this week's discussion is the Manager of Workplace Relations Services and potential Caulfield Cup jockey, Tim Nagel. Welcome, Tim.
Thanks, Stuart. Good to be here.
Tim, could you reveal the clue for this week's discussion? So for the benefit of those members who are listening to this podcast rather than watching, could you describe the object?
It's a SPC baked bean can.
That's true, Tim. And on the basis of that particular clue, what would you say the subject matter for this week's discussion is?
I'd say it was the Safe Patient Care Act.
Tim, so close, and yet still so wrong. Whilst SPC would be a good Safe Patient Care reference, it was really more a hint towards SCC, which is the Statewide Classification Committee. So the subject for today's discussion is the Statewide Classification Committee, Tim. And I'm mindful that this is one of the issues that the union raised during the discussions for the Nurses and Midwives Enterprise Bargaining Agreement, which related to the classification of staff.
Yeah, that's right. So one of the limitations of the previous agreement was the classification structure and the fact that it didn't necessarily neatly cover all staff. It certainly didn't accommodate for emerging roles. So we sought to address that during this round. And really the problem that we're trying to resolve is the similar roles in different organisations being classified differently and the disputes that that raises with no clear path for resolution.
So just to be clear, when we're talking about the Statewide Classification Committee, it may be statewide, but it's not for all occupations. We're talking about nurses and midwives and that a creation of a pathway for resolution for that group. So I would have thought that the absence of an identifiable pathway for resolution would have caused problem for both employees and employers previously.
Yeah, it's really difficult. I mean, nursing is probably a relatively small world, so people do understand and identify those differences in classifications across organisations, and that sort of inequity can cause problems.
So that brings us to a new provision within the agreement at Clause 14 and the inclusion of a statewide classification committee provision.
Yeah, so, I mean, really, again, it's about including a clause to provide a mechanism for resolving the classification of those emerging roles.
Emerging roles are such an interesting challenge in the sense that things are always changing.
That's right.
Whereas agreements are static documents.
Yeah.
So just in terms of the very beginning with regards to Clause 14 and the creation of that statewide classification committee, When does it apply?
So it's very specific in when it applies. So 14.1 talks about that the provision applies to an employer in two circumstances. The first is where the employee becomes aware that an employee's position is not subject to an existing classification in the agreement or previous determination of the statewide classification committee. That's the first instance. And the second is where the employer is deciding to create a position that is not subject to an existing classification under the agreement or previous determination of the statewide classification committee.
It's really interesting to hear about that issue of the previous determination of the statewide classification committee, which we'll come back to in a moment. But just in terms of that expression that's found at 14.1 about not subject to an existing classification of the agreement, what does that term mean?
Yeah, so, I mean, this is about those roles that genuinely don't fit within the current classification structure. So it's not about the titles of roles, because there may be a different title used, but it really does fit within the classification structure. So, you know, it might be a clinical services director, might be a different way to describe the director of nursing, for instance. If they're classified as a director of nursing and they're fulfilling that role, then they're covered by the enterprise agreement.
So it's arose by any other name,
that
kind of proposition. You're currently classified as Tim. If we were to call you Dennis, for example, that wouldn't mean that you fell outside the scope of being a Tim.
Exactly right.
And in terms of the initiation of that particular process, who starts the ball rolling?
So the employer will generally initiate the process, and that's what's contemplated in the scope of the clause. But that may occur secondary to an employee raising the issue. Hmm. So it might be either the employer identified it out of their own accordance, or it may be that an employer raises an issue as a process to go through to determine whether there is a classification under the current agreement, which may lead to the employer making the determination that there's not.
Okay. So let's start with the employer first. What does an employer need to do to initiate an application to the statewide classification committee?
So there's a process contained within the agreement. What we've done to try and make it as easy for people as possible is we've issued a bulletin 2225.
That number again?
2225, which contains a template. So that template contains all the things in the clause that's required to be submitted. And it also, so we've sent that out in accordance with the bulletin, but we've also got a copy of it on our app as well under the resource section of a statewide classification committee group.
So just in terms of the app, I understand that there's been a group created on the VHA community app that people can sign up for.
Yes, that's right. So everyone that's involved in classifications and particularly around the nurses that want to keep an eye on the nurses' classifications and the work of the statewide classification committee should join that group on the app.
So in terms of the app and the VHA community app and the creation of that group for the statewide classification committee, those people who are currently using the app simply need to select the groups function and select that group. For those people who have not yet activated their account, those members, then we'd be asking them to look at the link that's currently appearing on screen or to send us an email to vhaa@vhaa.com.au. But that's the way that they'll get ongoing information with regards to the activities for the statewide classification.
Definitely. It's critical that people access the app and that group. Because we know from the early discussion is that some of those previous determinations are going to be determinative of new applications. So it's worthwhile people keeping an eye on those developments.
And that's how we'll provide transparency with regards to that. So just moving on and talking about that application form, Tim, how does the application form work?
So the application form replicates the requirements of 14.1 of the agreement. Mm-hmm. So that lists where the notification to the SCC is made, what it needs to include. So it needs to include the position description of the role, mandatory and desirable post-registration skills, knowledge and education. It also needs to include the grade proposed by the applicant and the comparative positions used to determine the proposed grade. And that's really important, I think, is that these roles need to be considered within a context. So some of that comparative role is the context that it needs to be considered within. It also, 14.1 also requires proposed and or actual professional reporting lines to the proposed position be included. and the outline of the existing and proposed organisational structure applicable to the position. So where does it sit? Because we know that the supports available to individual roles is important in terms of the grading as well. And finally, the identification of EFT and skill mix that report to the position. The clause 14.1 also goes on to say that where the notification to the SCC applies to an existing employee, the employer will ensure the employee is given the opportunity to provide a number of things. So those include the outline of the skill duties, responsibilities and educational underpinning of the role, objective observations on any differences between the role and the described and that described in the position description, and finally, employer's response to the applicant's outline. So it's about making sure that where there's an existing incumbent, that they also provide some input into the decision as well.
So that's really interesting in the context of an application where effectively it becomes almost a joint application, or there's almost a right of reply built into the application process.
Yes, and I think it's important because it wouldn't be an appropriate process if it was just one-sided. It needs to be balanced, and it needs to take into consideration all the factors that are at play. And if there is an current incumbent, then their input is just as important.
So we've talked about the application process and how that occurs, but we haven't talked about the committee itself. So in terms of the SCC, what's the composition of that committee?
So the composition's covered at 14.2 of the clause. And what that says is that the statewide classification committee will comprise an equal number of nominees from the VHIA as the employee rep and also the ANMF on behalf of the employees. The SCC will also have a chairperson, an independent chairperson, either nominated by the parties or in the absence of that as determined by the department.
Minister, I think, even.
The minister, that's right, yes.
So the minister has the tiebreaker.
They do.
But what's happened in terms of the nomination for that chairperson role?
So, by consent, the parties have nominated Greg Smith.
Former Deputy President of the Fair Work Commission?
That's right. Greg Smith assisted the parties during the bargaining process, and both sides have got complete confidence that he'll be able to undertake that chairmanship.
So just in terms of the other elements of Clause 14.2 and the composition of the Statewide Classification Committee.
Yeah, so there's some procedural requirements in 14.2. So B says when any of the circumstances in subclause 14.1, so that's one that doesn't fall within the scope of the current classification structure or either an existing role or a new role, the employer will make a written notification to the SCC within 14 days and the chairperson will notify the ANMF and VHI in writing. And finally, 14.2c says that the SCC will commence to determine the matter within 21 days of the application being made and conclude its deliberations within a further 21 days.
So two lots of 21 days, title of 42, clearly an oblique reference to the former clause 42.
Yes.
So tell me how the committee's going to work in practice.
So so what we've done is that we've scheduled meetings on the first and the third Thursday of each month. And what will occur there is that there will be an initial step, a screening process from with the ANMF and the VHI sitting down just to make sure that the application's competent and it's got all it needs to have in it, that the role is not covered by the agreement, so there'll be just an initial assessment of that as well.
Okay, so the ones that are roles that, for instance, are an existing role within the classification structure but a different name, it's likely that those sort of applications would be weeded out at that point?
Yeah, that's right. Also, where there's previous decisions of the SCC are applicable and, more importantly, not applicable, so that it needs to be determined. And finally, where there's consensus to determine whether there's consensus regarding the appropriate classification.
And so that occurs when? Within the first 21 days?
Yeah, so that's designed to occur within the first 21 days. And following that, if there are applications that need to continue, then the SCC will meet within the next 21 days to make the determination.
So how does the Statewide Classification Committee interact with the dispute settlement procedure of the Nurses and Midwives Agreement?
So I think this is really important for members to understand is that the focus of the Statewide Classification Committee is very narrow. It is just pertaining to classifications or roles that fall outside the classification structure. So any roles that do fit within the current classification structure, where there's a dispute about that, the dispute resolution process, will apply.
As it always has.
As it always has. And even whether roles do go to the statewide classification committee is covered by the dispute resolution process as well.
And does the agreement prescribe any other matters that the statewide classification committee will need to be mindful of?
It does. It provides a list. We are dealing with emerging roles as well. So it's important that the statewide classification committee is mindful of sector developments and also research into developments in nursing practice. So it says that in considering an application, the statewide classification committee will utilise available research-based skill matrices and other relevant material. We know that several employers in doing some of the advanced practice work at the moment have utilised such matrices, so we'll be using those. Also, 14.3 says that classifications gradings is determined by the inherent requirements of the position, not the person. I think it's important to distinguish.
So it's not the capability of the person, it's about the role.
It's what the job is, it's what needs to be done, as opposed to what...
Could be done.
Could be done, that's right. Also, 40.3 goes on to say that the statewide classification committee may inform itself in any manner it sees fit.
That's very broad.
Yes.
It does sort of leave the door open for some form of interrogation, but never mind.
Or interpretive dance, I guess. Yeah. Including a SCC-agreed expert advisor to provide clinical expertise in an area of nursing or midwifery practice in relation to the classification matter under consideration.
I think that's really interesting that there's that capacity to utilise expert information and have an expert engage with that committee. That is, it's not simply looking in on itself, but is engaging with a broader body of evidence and potentially.
And I think that's really important. For the same reason, it's about utilising the current expertise within the field and the standards within the field as well.
So how will the SCC decide whether to support the proposed grade or to substitute a different grade? What would the process be?
So it's by consensus. So the expectation is that that will occur by consensus.
By consensus. So not something that happens every 5 years conducted by the ABS and then the computer crashes, something different to that?
That's what we were thinking, yes. So if it can't be done by consensus, then the chairperson will have the ultimate decision.
Okay. So the chairperson basically has the right to determine if agreement can't be reached within
That's
that
right.
group. Yeah. And what is the effect of the chairperson's... I understand that's in the form of a recommendation. What's the effect of that recommendation?
So the recommendation will be considered binding unless either the ANMF or the VHIA make an application to have the recommendation reviewed by the Commission within 14 days of that recommendation being made.
Okay. And what happens when that kind of application is made to the Commission?
So there's a process within the agreement about how that occurs. That will occur initially by... the application to the Commission will include the application that's been made, the recommendation, written reasons and supporting material. So really it's the output of the Statewide Classification Committee goes to the Commission. The Commission will be assisted by the Chairperson. So the Chairperson and the Commission will interact, who will explain their recommendation, the application and supporting material, and inform the Commission of the position of the ANMF and the VHIA. So that's really trying to narrow down where the points of difference are. The Commission will then adopt an inquisitory procedure, relying on the information previously provided in the Statewide Classification Committee processes and procedures, and make a determination. And that determination will be made in the form of a consent order.
So a consent order is quite interesting in the sense that the agreement is prescribing that there will be consent.
Yes, that's right.
And what's the process for informing the employer as to the outcome of the process?
So the agreement... requires the Statewide Classification Committee to notify the employer of the outcome of the application in writing within 14 days of the decision.
And what about the industry itself? I mean, how will the industry be informed about the outcomes of the Statewide Classification Committee, given that these effectively have precedent value?
Well, and that's what we talked about before. That we'll be using the app and specifically the Statewide Classification Committee group to relay the outcomes of the SCC to the field.
So it's really vital that anyone who is responsible for these sort of applications or needs to know what the outcomes are needs to get onto the app needs to select groups and select the statewide classification committee group.
That's right.
So just in terms of the classification change, where a change is the result of that process, when does that take effect from?
So it will apply from the date of the application or a later date determined by the statewide classification committee.
I think it's interesting that it talks about the date of the application as the sort of almost presumptive date or the earliest date at which the new grade can apply.
That's right, yeah. So until that determination's made, the existing classification remains.
So in terms of the existing classification applying until the determination of the statewide classification committee, effectively that's a status quo provision, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly what it is.
So what happens if the SCC reaches a conclusion that a lower classification ought to apply?
Yeah, so in those circumstances, the individual wage is preserved, so they don't decrease in their remuneration. And I think it's really important to make sure that there's no disincentives for people to access the system and for the appropriate classification to be determined as an output of that process.
So there's no jeopardy there.
That's right, yeah.
As such. But that, of course, only goes to the issue where somebody is in the role. As such, if it is that a role is proposed and a lower classification is assigned, then there is no need to preserve anything.
That's right, yes.
And so what are the key points that members should take away from this podcast with regards to the statewide classification committee?
So I think the first one is that there is benefits to both employers and employees with the certainty and the mechanism this statewide classification committee provides in resolving issues within classifications. The second one is that the trigger is where the role is not covered by the current agreement.
Not covered.
Not covered, and not just by the name of the role. The third one is that the SCC doesn't have a role in determining classifications outside of its scope. So it doesn't resolve classification disputes within the current classification structure. And finally, all applications and outcomes will be posted under the classification committee group or the statewide classification committee group within the app. Not only all applications and determinations, but also the application form and any of the matrices or research or anything else that is used through the process will also be posted.
So there'll be complete transparency with regards to how that operates.
Correct.
Tim, thank you so much for taking us through the Statewide Classification Committee.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Have you had lunch?
Not yet.
I'll have these. Thanks, Tim.